All right. Good afternoon. Buenas tardes, everyone. How's everyone doing? Yeah? All right. Excellent. Thank you so much. This is Microsoft Private Cloud Fast Track V3, MDC B375. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Jeff Woolsey. This is Lavanya Krishnan. And it's a pleasure to be here to talk about a whole bunch of things that we're doing in terms of the Microsoft Private Cloud Fast Track program. Before we do that, I did want to make sure that we covered the late-breaking news. Just wanted to make sure, in case you missed it, we had some pretty big announcements in the last couple of days. First one, the big one, actually one of the big ones, was this big world record. Very proud of this, quite honestly. This has been a great partnership with our friends and partners over at SAP. Before we actually began development of Windows Server 2012, I remember actually sitting down and chatting with a whole bunch of their architects and one of their lead architects, and I said, "Look, I want to make sure that SAP runs like a Ferrari on top of Hyper-V." I said, "Please help me understand what are your key requirements? What is it you need in terms of compute, in terms of memory, in terms of storage, in terms of IOPS, in terms of capacity, in terms of networking, everything? Give me every possible requirement you can think of so we can take that into consideration as we develop Server 2012." And they did. They were fantastic. Gave us a nice long list, and then we said, "Fantastic. Thank you very much." And then we went and exceeded every one of those expectations across the board. 64 virtual procs, a terabyte of memory, over a million IOPS from a single virtual machine, virtual fiber channel support, the list goes on and on and on. And because of that, as we tested Server 2012, before we even shipped it, I remember having these conference calls with the architects from SAP, and they literally said, "We don't understand what we're seeing." And I said, "Well, what don't you understand?" And they basically said, "We've never seen performance like this in a virtual machine on any platform. This is amazing. We just want to make sure this is right." And so as we continued, and finally we released Server 2012 now about a year ago, they very quickly, in short order, SAP said, "You know what? If you want to run SAP, the great way to do it is actually run it in a Hyper-V virtual machine." And now we're here to say, by the way, not only is it, it's great, it's world record great. So we're very proud of this. And again, a huge thanks to our partners at SAP. This speaks a lot to the performance, scalability, reliability, and capabilities of Hyper-V. And again, this is 2012. This isn't even on 2012 R2 yet. You better believe they're super excited with what they're seeing in terms of that, in terms of storage. The other one, obviously, is another huge announcement, obviously, is the big Microsoft Oracle partnership. And this one is tremendous because, quite honestly, I actually did my session this morning, and a gentleman came up to me afterwards and he said, he's like, "You've just made my day." And I said, "Explain to me why." And he said, "Well," he's like, "because technically I've been doing this." He's like, "I've been running Oracle in a Hyper-V VM on Windows Server 2012 for months now." And I said, "And?" And he said, "And it runs great. It runs fantastic. In fact, half my team doesn't even know it's in a VM. It's so good." And I said, "So what's the point?" He said, "This is fantastic because the support, I needed to have the support to be able to do this broad-based deployment." He's like, "I've been doing this throughout in little pockets here and there. Now I'm ready to go completely broad, and this is exactly what I'm looking for." So what makes this so relevant to this conversation today is if you're looking at a Microsoft Private Cloud Fast Track solution, think about this. You're talking SAP, you're talking Oracle, fully supported on Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V System Center, and think about what that means in terms of solutions as you start to consider those internally. Because support is something that's very important. I know for us at Microsoft, support with a capital S means a lot. It means we have guys that are willing to take the phone call, debug, and escalate it to our product teams. I know a lot of other virtualization vendors out there throw around the word support in the loosest of possible terms. Okay? I know that one of my competitors basically says, "Hey, it boots on my Hyper-V, on my hypervisor, so it's supported." But then when you ask them for a fix, they say, "Oh, well, not really. It's more or less compatible." For us, if we say support, it has a real hardcore meaning behind it. And that's part of how we think about our Private Cloud Fast Track. So one of the things I wanted to do is very quickly remind people of what our Cloud OS vision is. And my hope is by the end of the week that you're sick and tired of this slide. I hope by the end of the week you go back to your office, you go back to your friends, you go back to your colleagues, and you say, "My gosh, I'm sick and tired of that Microsoft Cloud OS vision, of them talking about their three clouds and talking about," because it means you finally get it. Because I've had so many people over the last year say to me, "Jeff, can you just explain to me how Microsoft thinks about the cloud? To me, it's very crystal clear. So I'm going to come off the stage. I like to walk and talk. So first thing, when I think about the Microsoft Cloud OS vision, it's first of all, unless the clicker doesn't work. There we go. It's three legs to a stool. Okay? The first one is private. And private is an outgrowth of virtualization. It's not the same. Virtualization does not equal cloud. I know there are virtualization vendors selling that, but it's not the same. Let me explain. In the 90s, people were buying servers left and right. I was in a small startup. In fact, there was a point, I believe, where there was a probably we had a one-to-one server for every person in the company. Okay? But guess what? Servers were cheap. Servers were inexpensive. Even as we got into the 2000s, I would still talk to people at Microsoft that would come in and say, Jeff, I have all the budget I need to buy as many servers as I need. It's not a problem. The problem is I have no power to power them with and no place to put them. They would say, I'm in a Chicago high-rise, or I'm in a New York financial building. I'm in a place where I literally cannot get any more power. For me to get more power means I need to go to the city and request an upgrade on the grid. This is a huge problem. Virtualization arose as a way to solve that problem. So now we're going to take a whole bunch of physical machines, we're going to virtualize them, run them on a single physical server, and now instead of one workload per server, I got 5 VMs, 10 VMs, all running on a single server. Now that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But that is virtualization for consolidation. That is not cloud. And here's why. When we did that consolidation, we did that physical to virtual conversion, we put them on a physical machine, we still treated them as individual entities. The management paradigm never changed. I still log into a virtual machine, I still treat it as its own little entity, I'd patch it or I'd give it some more memory, give it a little more storage, change the network configuration, give it some more storage, etc. That's not cloud. When I think about cloud, I think about deploying services, highly templated, highly standardized services. For example, I want to deliver you SharePoint. I don't think about that as a VM. I think about it as that a classic three-tier application. SQL backend, middle tier, front end. Guess what? I want to deploy that as a service. And what that means is, guess what? It starts off with this amount of compute, this amount of memory, this amount of storage, but over time it just grows elastically. And guess what? If there are a few people using it, it shrinks elastically. Cloud is requestable. Cloud is chargeable. Cloud is elastic. Cloud is available. I did not use the word virtualization in there. Okay, those are the core tenets of cloud. Private cloud, again, is about control. I talk to many customers all around the world. I've spoken to folks in Germany that say, Jeff, Azure looks great, but I have workloads, I have IP that needs to run in a German data center on German soil by a German citizen in a German data center, period. End of story. All right, now, are you going to argue with me and try and tell me to take it up in Azure? No, I'm not. Absolutely not. What I'm going to tell you to do is do what makes business sense for you. This is not a technological conversation. This is a compliance conversation. This is a regulatory conversation. This is a business conversation. Do what makes sense for you. If it doesn't make sense to run in the public cloud, then great. Let's help you build the best private cloud together. That's what Fast Track is all about. It's about giving you that developed, prepackaged solution ready to go. So private cloud is about control. Public cloud is about scale. So in the public cloud, we've got Azure, we've got Office 365, and we've got Azure Virtual Machines. With Windows Azure, we have pure platform as a service. With Office 365, pure software as a service. Azure Virtual Machines, that's infrastructure as a service. You want to just roll out a VM, go for it. They're waiting up for you right now. If you want to develop a native service on Azure that literally spans the entire globe, that's what you get. You get massive cloud scale with our public cloud. And then finally, we also have service providers. So private cloud gives me control. Public cloud gives me scale. Service providers give me customization and reach. And they're extremely important. We know, for example, talking with customers, they say, look, I have a great relationship with my service provider. I've been using them many years. We have a great relationship. I get great terms with them. And they do some customization for me. Like literally, I have my servers are in a specific rack. They're cordoned off in a specific way. Or they have specific SLAs or specific terms that I really like, and I don't want to change that relationship. Fantastic. We don't want you to either. Let's let's give you the ability, let's have the ability to run as service provider, and let's maintain that relationship. The importance here is we think of this as one consistent platform. This is really important. This is really different. Because if you talk to Google, Google has no concept of on-premises or private cloud. Google's it's all running up there. If you talk about Amazon, sorry, it's all up there. If you talk to VMware, well, they're in private cloud land. They have this hybrid thing that nobody understands yet, and neither do I. But we look at this very holistically. It's private, it's service providers, and it's the public cloud. And more importantly, we want to do what makes business sense to you. Today, you may say, you know what, I'm going to build on the private cloud because that's what I've been doing. Tomorrow, next year, you know what, why don't I move to Office 365? We have a lot of people. We have a lot of cities that are actually adopting Office 365. Santa Clara County, which is in the heart of California in Silicon Valley, they basically said, why are we running our own Exchange servers? Why don't we just use Office 365 and instead have those IT resources do other things that are more important instead of just getting the mail for us? So in addition, we think about this CloudOS vision. It's about key tenets like development. It's about making sure that with things like Visual Studio, I can develop and provide the best applications, again, whether it's on-premises, in a service provider, or in the public cloud. It's about management. System Center sits right in all of these. Notice System Center on private cloud, in service providers, and in the public cloud, we're making huge investments in System Center Advisor, System Center Intune. We have System Center Management Packs to manage your services that are running on Azure. Again, consistent management. Oh, and I should also point out the Windows Azure Pack. I have it incorrectly labeled here right now, Azure Services. Think about that Azure Pack for just a moment. You saw that demonstrated this morning. Claire demonstrated that in the keynote. So she showed this interface that looked just like Azure, that nice, crystal, clean, blue, white, and black interface that you see on Azure, except it was for managing the private cloud. We're giving you this code. We're giving it to you. Because one of the biggest challenges we see is customers come up to us and they say, look, if I do my private cloud, it looks one way. If I go to Amazon, it looks another way. If I go to Azure, it looks another way. If I go to Salesforce, it looks another way. And guess what? Even though cloud is supposed to be easy and it's supposed to be reducing the complexity, every time I have to retrain someone on one of these, it's a pain. Well, guess what? We're giving you the interface. We're giving you the UI so we can create this one consistent platform. Imagine this. You're building your cloud for your data center, for your enterprise, and guess what? It looks just like ours. And as we provide more services through the Azure Pack, guess what? You can just easily consume those on your premises. That's how we think about this. Data. Notice SQL Server, both on private cloud and service providers, and then in the public cloud, SQL Server is available as an Azure virtual machine or as a native SQL database service on Azure itself. Identity. Brad mentioned it this morning. When it comes to identity, there is nothing more authoritative and canonical than Active Directory. People are using AD on their private cloud service providers, and Azure Active Directory is there. And as Brad pointed out this morning, we already have almost 500,000 different companies have federated with Active Directory, Azure AD. I mean, we have a huge community in Azure Active Directory. It's unparalleled right now. And then finally, virtualization. It's a key tenet. It's not the end-all, be-all. People finally realize, oh, virtualization actually isn't the end. No. It's a key part. It's a key facet. But it's only a very small part. This is what the full vision looks like. This is what we're building. Every day we get up, this is what we're thinking about. Whether we're Windows Server, whether we're SQL, whether we're clients, figuring out how we plug into all of these things, we want to give you one grand unified experience. So we have on-premises and public clouds. One thing, I've been kind of making this comment to see just how much it resonates, but something I've noticed. I found out there are really two kinds of enterprises. There are those enterprises that realize they want to be a service provider. And there's those enterprises that haven't realized that yet. Because most of them, I talk to a lot of CXOs, and they come and they say, Jeff, I want this Elastic thing, and I want these clouds, and I want the self-service portal, and I want to be able to charge back to different divisions in my organization. And I say, oh, you want to be a service provider? And like, no. I don't want to be a service provider, but I want the charge back and the Elastic and the highly available and the lower cost. And I'm like, okay, I want you to think about that a little bit, but you really want to be a service provider. Think about that. It's a mindset. People want to be able to pool all of their resources, dramatically lower their cost, provide standardized offerings. I want to give you what we call t-shirt sizes. I want to give you SharePoint. Here's a small deployment of SharePoint. Here's a medium deployment of SharePoint. Here's a large deployment of SharePoint. Same thing for SQL or Exchange or Dynamics or Link. I don't want to have to go and recreate the wheel every time I want to do a deployment. No, let's give you standardized templates, service templates, and do that deployment. So, a couple of your common questions. How can I get a Microsoft private cloud deployed quickly? Get this question all the time. Jeff, look, I just want to run 500 VMs. Here's the piece of paper. Here's the blank check. I will fill in the number. Just tell me what I need to run 500 VMs. Sounds like a really simple question, and I would love to give you a one-size-fits-all answer, but it's really not that easy. What are you trying to run? Is this 500 web servers? Is this 500 databases? The answer is, actually, it's probably 500 of everything. That's what makes it so challenging. The answer is all of the above. It's file, it's print, it's mail, it's exchange, it's domain controllers, it's web servers, it's print servers, etc. But the important point is we want to make it easy for you to do that. How can I build a Microsoft private cloud with confidence and reduce risk? Good question. What if I want to build this myself? I have strategic investments with hardware partners. For example, hey, this has been my hardware partner for 10 years. I work with insert OEM partner here. And I want the flexibility to work with these partners. Can I do that? The good news is we've been working with all of the partners in the industry. That's one of the great things about the Fast Track program is the flexibility. If you're a Cisco shop, you like Cisco UCS, guess what? Cisco has an awesome Fast Track solution. Are you an NEC partner? Are you a Fujitsu partner? Are you an IBM partner? Are you a Dell partner? Are you an HP partner? Guess what the answer is? We got all those. They're all here. That's why I can't wait to tell you about these. So helping you choose the right solution. A couple things to think about. So you could certainly go the all-custom route. You want to build this thing yourself. You want to pick every little part. You want to pick every single NIC. You want to pick every feature on the NIC. Go right ahead. We'll give you all of the documentation. We'll let you... Here's the reference architecture, go to town. There's also the other side, which is, you know what? I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to go with a cloud service provider where they've done all the work, and I'm just going to start consuming resources. Well, we think there's a middle ground, and that's where we think about private cloud fast track, which is, no, we've actually done the sizing work for you. We've actually done all of the architecture work for you. And what I mean by that is we've thought about redundancy, we've thought about resiliency, we've thought about high availability. We haven't, you know, we're not just saying, here's a grab bag of parts, let's go. No, no, we actually have validation, we have different characteristics, different features, core engineering tenets that go into the private cloud fast track. So what's nice about the fast track is you do get a high level of integration, pre-integration, and low deployment time because it comes to you pre-assembled, pre-configured, storage, networking, system center, ready to go. So, it includes reference architecture. It includes end-to-end deployment guide. Do it yourself. Like I said, if you want to go ahead and you want to pick every little part, I know there are guys that still like to do that. I know there are guys that still like to build their own PCs. I stopped doing that a while ago. Just not worth it my time anymore. And there are still people that want to do build every little part. Guess what? We'll give you all the docs. They're publicly available. But then we also validate this design with our rich software portfolio. We're making sure that we want to point out HA is important at every part of the stack, not just clustering, not just storage, but at networking, in the applications themselves, in the guest. What about guest clustering? You have to think about every layer of the stack. We want to provide innovative partner-ready solutions with turnkey options. I've had plenty of folks say, look, Jeff, like I said, here's the check. I will fill in the number. I literally want someone to bring me a rack or two or 10, whatever that number may be, and just let me turn the thing on and go. Because I need, to me, agility. I'm willing to pay because I need agility. I need this cloud now. And yeah, I could spend the next year trying to haggle the cost down or trying to build it myself, but I'm willing to pay because I need it right now. Please. End-to-end integrated solution comprising compute, networking, and storage. Yes, this is a complete solution. This is a complete package. This isn't just servers. This isn't just networking. This is the whole thing. This is compute, storage, and networking all delivered as a complete solution. So why use it? Speed, agility. You want a private cloud setup? We're ready to do it. Reduce risk. We have gone through and validated with all of these partners together. We have mandatory engineering tenets and criteria that they have to follow. We have recommended ones, and we have some loose suggestions as well. And we're going to talk about that and actually explain to you what that criteria looks like. And again, it's about flexibility and choice. Nobody wants to say, you can have any car color you want as long as it's black. Okay? We want to give you all sorts of different solutions out there. So let's start with redundancy and resiliency. This is actually a core key tenet to how we think about not only fast track, but clouds in general. For example, hardware faults. Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V, we actually can plug in and take advantage of Windows hardware error architecture and RAS. At the physical node layer, we have redundancy. We have both redundancy, physical node redundancy. We both have solutions for planned downtime and unplanned downtime. So, for example, with clustering, we get unplanned downtime. I can literally walk up to a server, yank out the power cable, the virtual machines automatically restart on another node. Live migration for planned downtime. I can live migrate VMs around. I can take a server down without any sort of downtime. So we have it at the physical layer. We also have I/O redundancy. Note we have it for networking. So we have network load balancing and failover via Windows NIC teaming. We also have it for storage. If you're using block-based storage, we have storage multipath I/O, whether you're using Fibre Channel or iSCSI. And if you're using the new Windows Server 2012 file server, we also have multi-channel SMB. So SMB itself is multi-channel, so that if a channel goes down, a NIC goes down, guess what? It's redundant, continues right along without any interruption. Then you move up to the application and the service itself. So there's a number of different ways we have redundancy here. Number one, for those applications that aren't cluster-aware. I've run into this quite a number of times. Jeff, yes, I've got cluster-aware apps, SQL, Exchange, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but I also have some of these older things. Okay, these are some things we wrote ourselves or we bought from another company, and guess what? They're not cluster-aware. Is there something you can do to help me provide high availability for these applications that don't have native HA? Well, yes, in fact, we do. In 2012, we introduced Hyper-V app monitoring. So we can actually look at an application running in a VM and say, oh, guess what? This looks like this process has died, or it looks like you can actually put in a number of things that you can monitor, some lightweight monitoring in there, and you could restart the service, you could kill the service. There's a number of things that we can do to help you for those applications that are badly behaved. I remember talking with a company, had an application, it was critical to their business, but had a well-known memory leak. And basically, the app died about every two and a half weeks. And sometimes they'd forget to restart or kick the server, as they like to call it, and all of a sudden it just went dead. Well, something like this could actually help remind them, prevent those issues from happening, and do that work for you automatically. We also have guest clustering with iSCSI and Fibre Channel. We also have guest teaming, so you get network redundancy within the virtual machine, and you get it with SRIOV NICs. And what's nice about our solution is you get guest teaming with SRIOV, and it also works with live migration. So there's no trade-offs there, unlike other virtualization platforms. Then, when it comes to DR, when you leave the rack, we have a couple of different solutions here as well. Inbox, we have Hyper-V Replica. Hyper-V Replica allows us to replicate virtual machines basically wherever you want to go. It has no storage requirements. It works with direct attached storage. It works with file-based storage. It works with SANs. It's all there. If you have some higher requirements like, hey, I need a synchronous replication, great. We integrate with your SANs. With cluster shared volumes in Server 2012 and later, we basically integrate with your storage arrays for synchronous replication. So we have your full redundancy and resiliency up and down the entire stack. So from an architectural standpoint, let's kind of walk through a couple of the different types of architectures that we think about. A couple of our architectural principles. Obviously, we're thinking about this, again, end-to-end. We're thinking compute, network, and storage. Nothing here is done in isolation. And again, I'm thinking very specifically Windows Server and System Center. I'm going to say this over and over again. When we think private cloud at Microsoft, it's Windows Server and System Center. I get people that come to me all the time and say, hey, Jeff, I'm running Hyper-V. Do I have cloud? Well, no. You have the makings of cloud. You have the virtualization platform. But that's not cloud. Again, you need systems management on top of this. It's a full, rich experience. And that's Windows Server and System Center. So some of our key architectural principles, pooled resources. You want to dramatically reduce your costs. You want to treat. You want to get into the mindset of a service provider. A service provider is, give me lots of storage, give me lots of networking, give me lots of compute, give me all these resources, let me pool them, and let me slice them and dice them. But it all starts with these pooled resources. Next, I want this thing to be elastic. I want to be able to grow and change on the fly as needed. It's got to be continuously available. This is not an option. If a server node goes down, if a storage node goes down, if a network link goes down, every part of this has to be redundant. That's a basic tenet of how we think about cloud. Predictable. Obviously, you want to make sure that you're avoiding any sort of, whoops, what just happened there? All of a sudden, things that can make management much more difficult. That's why System Center and management is so important, because you want to be in there and you want to monitor the infrastructure and you want to look for any trends and avoid and have it provide predictive analysis and helping you in terms of monitoring your cloud. It's usage-based. You want to be able to charge back on whatever metric. Some people say, you know what, I just want to charge back on a VM or a small VM or a medium VM or a medium-sized service template. So for example, if I give you a medium-sized SharePoint deployment, it's X dollars. If I give you a large-sized SQL, well, you're probably running on bigger storage with bigger network requirements. I'm going to charge you more. Okay, so we've got to give you that ability to do usage-based. Multi-tenant, obviously secure, and self-service. Self-service is key to this. I want to be able to, again, if I'm an enterprise or a service provider, I want to be able to give you the self-service portal that says, hey, I want that medium-sized SharePoint. I want that large-sized web server, and I just want to be able to pick it and go. Fantastic. And of course, partner extensible. That's key to our private cloud fast track. So we think about it as a solution spectrum. We've got the small things, really 2 to 6 hosts, SMB branch office, and then we think larger, 6 to 64 hosts. And in the left-hand side, you can see we've got cluster in a box, clustered NAS and SAN. And what we're seeing is, and I believe we have some of these here at the show today, you should check out the partner pavilion. But we've got partners, for example, Dell has a single box, single solution. It's got 4 blades in it. It's got integrated storage. It's this wonderful little SMB solution. You can literally drop into a branch office and Hyper-V storage, everything's ready to go. The thing is fully redundant. It's clustered in the box. It uses shared storage. Its power is redundant. Its networking is redundant. Fantastic solution for fast track. Then, of course, we've got the larger end solutions where, you know what, I'm going to run a 16-node cluster, and I want to use a scale-out file server to give me redundancy and resiliency for my storage. So there's definitely a wide spectrum when it comes to that. Again, here's another one that kind of talks a little bit about the small and medium business configuration, the enterprise, and enterprise hoster configuration, which can get obviously a lot larger. And I'm going to dive into this a little bit more. So in terms of the small configuration, some of the design patterns, cluster in a box, converge, NAS, SAN. Some of these design considerations, so here's one example of a cluster in a box design configuration. In this case, essentially, this is all in a single enclosure. Okay, what we have here are actually 2 servers housed in the same enclosure, redundant power. It's actually using shared SAS. So what you're actually getting is shared storage, so you're getting the ability to cluster in a very small compartmentalized solution. So you have the availability. You're not giving anything up. You still have a clusterable, highly available solution. It's got dual power domain. So again, one of those power outages go out, you know, it's going to continue right along. By the way, make sure you do plug it into 2 different circuit breakers. I've had that happen in the past where someone plugged 2 powers into the same one and the power went out and you didn't get any redundancy there. What's nice about this is it's simple. It's literally pre-wired. Everything is inside the box. The SAS connectors, power, everything. It's literally, I drop this thing off, I plug it into my power, and I go. And it's flexible, meaning not only do you get all of these capabilities, but it even still has PCI slots. For example, if you decide, you know what, you want to add some additional networking options. And it even has external SAS. So if you realize, hey, you know what, I bought this thing, I love it, but I need a little bit more storage, you can even plug in external JBODs to give you additional storage. So There's some fantastic solutions out here, and this is a cluster-in-a-box solution. Something to really consider for those SMB branch offices where they're literally very often their data center or their branch office, data center essentially sometimes is the closet with a little bit more power and a little bit more cooling. And these can come in very portable but very powerful packages. So when we move to medium configurations, now we get to three different design patterns, and it gets a little interesting here. So there's basically three different ones I'm going to target here for just a moment. First of all, there's continuous availability using SMB storage. For example, our new Windows file server that we delivered in 2012 and enhancing even more in 2012 R2. Then we've got converged infrastructure, where you're basically doing, we'll get to that moment, and then non-converged infrastructure, more of your traditional SAN-based fiber channel. So let's walk through each one of these. I just realized this clicker, I'm going to just, excuse me for 1 second. There we go. All right. So let's talk about this first design pattern. All right. This one is continuously available over SMB. So in this case, we've got Hyper-V clusters consuming storage from a scale-out file server. So if you haven't heard, we've delivered this fantastic new scale-out file server in Windows Server 2012. It is continuously available, meaning you set up at least a two-node file server cluster, and if one of them goes down, the other one continues right along. It is fault tolerant. Okay? It is completely continuously available. So in this pattern, we're assuming you're using a scale-out file server or some other SMB3-enabled storage device. Requires network infrastructure between the Hyper-V servers and file servers, obviously, because that's where the storage for the VMs virtual disks live. And it's optimal for low-cost JBOD. What we really like about the file server and the investments we're making in SMB3, honestly, is we're trying to reduce the cost and complexity of storage. Cost and complexity of storage is a big, big problem. Talked to a lot of CXOs, and they say, real quick question, what's the most expensive thing in your data center? And without hesitation, they all say storage. It's not even close. It's a huge percentage of their IT spend, and they're looking at ways to make it easier and reduce that cost. Boy, this clicker. Okay. So with that in mind, let me quickly talk about some of the investments we are making in storage and in the file server. And one of the things I want to do is talk a little bit about storage itself. So if you've ever looked at a modern storage appliance, whether it's a NAS device or a SAN device, what's in it? Like literally, if you go out and you buy a NAS or SAN device, they'll give you two heads and a whole bunch of disks attached in these expansions. Sometimes they call them trays. But essentially, you have these heads. Well, what's in those storage heads? Those storage heads include a bunch of x86, x64 processors, include memory, include network adapters, include storage host bus adapters, most likely SAS. Sounds familiar? In fact, that sounds a lot like a server to me. Well, in fact, generally, that's what it is, except they put a bigger price tag on it. Well, if you take that SAN and deconstruct that head a little bit more, what does that SAN or NAS head look like? Well, on the back end, it literally has the physical interfaces. This is where you pull disks. This is where you create simple mirrored parity LUNs. And this is what actually plugs into all of your physical disks. And again, it's over SAS. Then the front end of that SAN, or NAS, presents interfaces, iSCSI, fiber channel or over Ethernet, NFS, or SMB. So that's what the front end looks like. And then, of course, they always sell you at least two. And the reason why they sell you two, because if this one goes down for whatever reason, that's okay, because this one will continue right along. You see, it's clustered, and it's scale out. So if one goes down, the other one continues, and then you can add another one, and it just scales up, and you can add another one, and it scales up, and you can add another one, and it scales up. And generally, they start at two, and most people will go to four. Some of them will even go as high as eight. Most people don't go beyond two or four. And of course, then your servers attached to that storage via Ethernet or fiber channel. So it could be a gigabit, 10 gigabit, or it could be 1, 2, 4, 8, 16 gigabit fiber channel. So that's what a traditional storage appliance looks like. And the reason why I bring this up is because I want to explain in good clarity here what we're doing in the Server 2012 and 2012 R2 file server. So again, here's the same picture, but this time with the file server in place. So what's that back end? That back end, that's Spaces. That's exactly what Spaces does. So when you saw me today and in the keynote demo, I talked about I have a 17 terabyte pool. That pool consisted of 20 hard disks and 4 SSDs. That was my entire pool. Okay? What I showed you today was that I enabled automatic tiering. That's when I went from 7,400 IOPS to over 124,000 IOPS. That was the beauty of automatic tiering. That's all happening in Spaces. Now on the front end, well, lo and behold, that's the file server. That's what presents my interfaces, iSCSI, NFS, SMB. And in fact, we made huge investments in SMB in Server 2012 with SMB3. SMB3 is multi-channel, supports encryption, massive, continuously available, resilient. It supports the scale-out file server. So literally, if this server goes down, guess what? This one continues right along. It's an active scale-out file server. And in fact, if you want, add another one or add another. In fact, we'll scale all the way out to 8 nodes in a file server. And you can add or remove nodes all hot without any downtime. And of course, your server's attached to this. But for us, it's either 1 gigabit or 10 gigabit Ethernet, or it could even be 40 gigabit or 56 gigabit and even RDMA. By the way, if you're noticing, hey, Jeff, those are faster than 16 gigabit fiber channel, you're right. Those are faster than 16 gigabit fiber channel. A lot faster than 16 gigabit fiber channel at a much, much, much lower cost. So we're seeing dramatic performance improvement. And quite honestly, our customers have told us, please continue to focus on this. Because every customer I talk to has a storage problem. Every single customer has a storage problem. It costs too much, I don't have enough, or I have a whole bunch of storage and it's everywhere and I can't manage it because I have a little bit of storage from this vendor, a little bit of storage from this vendor, a little bit of storage from this vendor. So we're making a huge investment in this file server. So this is what our cloud deployment kind of looks like here. You can see Hyper-V communicating over SMB to our scale-out file server. And some of the highlights of the scale-out file server is, number one, flexibility. Migration, shared storage, simplicity. File shares. Everybody knows how to configure a file share. This isn't LUN masking or zoning or worldwide port names or ugh. This is, look, stick your virtual disk on a file share. ACL your file shares. You're done. Much, much easier. Low acquisition and operations cost. Storage is fault tolerant. I'm going to keep saying that because I have a lot of people that even after I do this session will come up to me and say, but Jeff, when I buy a SAN and one of the head goes down, the other one continues right along. Doesn't that, you know, aren't I giving that up here? No. If this one goes down, this one continues right along. It's completely active, and it's completely transparent to any and all workloads. That's the beauty of SMB3. And the Hyper-V VMs are obviously highly available because those are clustered. So this first design pattern, continuously available over SMB. Let's actually walk through the entire architecture of this one. So first of all, it's resilient at every layer. So let's start assuming we've got a scale-out file cluster. So now I've got my 10 gigabit top of LAN, rack LAN RDMA. So again, in this configuration, we're assuming 10 gig NICs. The first thing you're probably thinking, but Jeff, I want to use low-cost 1 gig NICs. And that's fine. But that's not what we're building here. We are building a private cloud fast track solution that gives you the flexibility, the extensibility, the elasticity to do what you need to do. So the first thing we want to do is we want to use 10 gig NICs, and we're also going to use 10 gig NICs with RDMA. So we actually have 4 10 gig NICs in here. Let me explain why. We're going to team these. The left, we're going to team for networking. The right, we're going to use multi-channel transparent failover. So again, this gives me resiliency for both my networking path and my storage path. As we move up, I'm going to trunk those. So now I've aggregated my networking on the left. And now with VLAN trunking, I provide my VM, my virtual machine networks, my live migration network, my cluster shared volume network, iSCSI and host management. I'm carving this up in software. That's what VLAN trunking is doing. This is all about aggregating and then carving it up in software. Now I have my Hyper-V parent partition. I've got Hyper-V. I've got virtual switches. Now you can see, guess what? There's my VLAN trunking. I've got live migration. I've got cluster CSV. I've got iSCSI. This is actually for all my virtual machines. So my virtual machine networks are going through virtual switches here. I've got my own dedicated live migration network traffic because I want to make sure that I can give a good portion of that to live migration and have speedy live migration. I have cluster shared volume. CSV requires its own network traffic, and iSCSI, and I'll get to why iSCSI in just a moment. Then on top of that, I've got my virtual machines themselves. And you can see I've got two types of virtual machines. I've got non-clustered VMs. So this one isn't using any sort of clustering within the VM. So it's just talking directly to my VM VLAN trunk for networking. And then I have guest clusters. And in guest clusters, I need to surface up a LUN to be able to do guest clustering, at least with Server 2012. And that's why we have that, so we can surface up an iSCSI LUN. So that is the complete architecture all the way up the stack. Now, spoiler alert, maybe you've heard this or maybe you haven't, but in 2012 R2, we're trying to simplify this. In fact, in 2012 R2, you won't even need this, because what we're introducing is a new feature called shared VHDX. With shared VHDX, you can now do guest clustering, and you don't need to provide an iSCSI LUN. You don't need to provide a fiber channel LUN into the VM. What we actually do is we actually provide a VHDX file, and you can share that out. So it no longer means that you have to surface a physical LUN into the VM to do guest clustering. This is solving a really, really hard problem in a really elegant way. Nobody else is doing this, and we're delivering it in the Server 2012 R2. But for today, for folks that want to do guest clustering, that's exactly how you would do it in an all networking 10 gig type of infrastructure. So that's our first one. Now we have design pattern number two, converged infrastructure. So a little bit different here. Here you're talking about basically, well, let's just walk through it. And I'm sorry I don't have this in a pretty PowerPoint version. The big difference here is, remember on the last one, on the left-hand side I had networking, and on the right-hand side I had 10 gigabit for storage. Well, in this one, what we're doing is we're using 10 gigabit converged network adapters, but as you can see up here, instead of going with SMB, we're going with fiber channel over Ethernet. So this is a converged infrastructure. Okay, if you want to go with a fiber channel over Ethernet, then you can do that. To get storage resiliency, you're going to use MPIV and you're going to use MPIO. Sorry to be talking in acronyms. That's multipath IO. This gives me all of the redundancy I need for my storage path, and then I would use virtual fiber channel. So in the last one, where everything was over SMB, I used iSCSI into my guest cluster. This one, because I'm using fiber channel, I'm going to use virtual fiber channel to provide guest clustering. So in both situations, we satisfied all the requirements. We gave you resiliency, redundancy at every part of the stack, but it really is a preference. Do you want to go down an SMB path? Do you want to go down a converged network fiber channel over Ethernet path? Okay, that's really a personal decision. A lot of people, you know, fiber channel over Ethernet, I'm not sure it's taking off as fast as everyone thought it was going to be. I don't see personally a lot of it myself. But it's certainly an option there, and that's why we wanted to make sure we provide this converged option. So finally, we have design pattern number three. And this is the most traditional of your looking architectures. And basically here, we're going to go with traditional old fiber channel. Okay, if you want to go down this path, we can do that one as well. On the left-hand side again, we've got our 10 gigabit NIC. Again, we are teaming that. We are then VLAN trunking it so that we have VM, live migration, cluster, iSCSI, all of these things on the left-hand side for all of my networking. On the right-hand side, though, this time we're going with traditional straight-up fiber channel. So we've got two fiber channel NICs for 8 gigabit. And of course, these are using NPIV and these are using MPIO. So again, multipath IO gives you redundancy and resiliency for your fiber channel adapters in an active-active configuration. So if one goes down, the other continues right along. And then of course, to go into the guest, we do guest clustering again because this is fiber channel. We're going to use virtual fiber channel within the VMs. So again, in all of these situations, we've given you resiliency at every part of the stack, redundancy at high availability at every part of the stack. There's nothing that's a single point of failure, and in fact, we even deliver guest clustering all the way into the VM. So all of those different ones met. The question you have to ask yourself is SMB, FCOE, FC. That's really what you want to think about. Personally, I'll tell you, my preference, we're making a huge, huge investment in SMB and the file server. And the reason why is it's about reducing costs and it's about reducing complexity. But at the same time, we also understand we want to balance this with flexibility. And we know there are plenty of folks out there that like their fiber channel, want to stick with their fiber channel, and guess what? We got great solutions for fiber channel as well. So, two-node Hyper-V cluster. One thing I want to point out is, as I've been going through those design patterns, those were all the Hyper-V compute nodes. Okay? So think about your private cloud is going to have your compute nodes, it's going to have your storage nodes, but it also has to have your management nodes. Okay? So System Center, you're going to set up two nodes, and you're going to cluster that, so your management is also highly available. And so System Center is highly available. And so we also have that designed in here as well. So as part of the design architecture, we've got a variety of different ways we're providing resiliencies here. We've got host clustering. We have native application HA. We also have guest clustering. So for example, for System Center VMM running inside the virtual machine, you can do guest clustering. If you're running on the host side, we've got things like App Controller, the Service Manager Portal, Operations Manager Reporting Center. So again, different levels of HA, but again, even the management heads have to be resilient and redundant. So with that, I'm going to pass it on over to Lavanya. We're going to talk about partners and how they can be part of Fast Track Solutions.
Thank you, Jeff. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking time to attend our session, though it's the last one of the day. Jeff went through the common questions that we kept asked. And one of it is, how do I build a solution? Or if I'm a partner, what do I need to do to get to build a private cloud fast track solution? I'm going to go over the fast track process in steps. First, you formulate a solution. So we provide the reference architecture, and we provide the end-to-end deployment guide. So based on the reference architecture and your hardware, you basically formulate the solution that best works or that you want to build. And then the checklist is built. Now, the checklist is actually the criteria that Microsoft provides, that we provide, which is basically what are the mandatory guidelines that we want you to adhere to, what are the recommended ones, and what are the optional ones. So you compare your hardware and the reference architecture, and you build a checklist to basically say, OK, this is what my solution is going to do. And then you build the solution. And the last part is actually getting the solution validated through the Fast Track program. This is basically the Microsoft stamp, which says, yes, this solution has been validated. It's going to work end to end in a well-integrated fashion. So these are the different steps. And then the actual validation process itself. The validation process is multiple-fold. First and foremost is that every hardware solution built for the private cloud should be Windows Hardware Certified, which is basically the logo which says, this particular hardware solution is certified for Windows Server. This is to ensure that your solution is reliable, secure, manageable, and all the roles and features promised by Windows Server is provided. And then the failover clustering validation. Just like Jeff mentioned, redundancy and high availability is key in any private cloud solution. So we actually provide a tool in the OS, which is the failover clustering validation tool, which basically runs a series of tests on the underlying hardware and the software to ensure that the failover cluster feature is able to support the hardware. And then if you use a clustered RAID controller shared storage interface, then we also require that a clustered RAID controller validation is run. And then we also have a predefined set of validation criteria to check if all the mandated, recommended, and optional criteria are met by the hardware solution. So the mandatory and recommended and optional, why do we have three different criteria? Now, mandatory ones are vendor agnostic criteria, which are must-haves in order to have the roles and features provided by Windows Server that's highly redundant and highly available. There is no compromise here. And then we have a set of recommended criteria, which is basically really good to have industry best practices, but it's at the discretion of the partner or the business to see what makes sense for them. And I'll give some sample criteria on each of these to make it clear as to why we make them mandatory or recommended. And then the optional is basically good to have criteria in your solution, which is totally at the discretion of the partner or you. So here are some of the sample mandatory criteria. Again, to reiterate, redundancy and availability is key in any private cloud solution. So we need to make sure that failover clustering is not an option. It has to be there. The rack or blade chassis design must provide redundant power supply. We don't want one power supply dying, causing the entire solution to break down. Virtual machine mobility. We should have the hardware solution should be able to move VMs from machine to machine seamlessly. Hyper-V live migration, storage migration is absolutely mandatory. And then the recommended criteria. Key example is the BitLocker encryption. It's an industry best practice. It's really good. We strongly recommend having BitLocker encrypted cluster storage so that your data is very secure. However, there are some key business scenarios where it is not possible to have a BitLocker encrypted cluster storage. So we did not make this mandatory. We make this a recommended criteria. Same with standardized VM deployments. We actually want your private cloud solutions to be easily deployable and consistently deployable every single time, which is why we recommend the use of VMM service templates. Optional criteria, Hyper-V application monitoring. There are some solutions which do not have failover clustering, for example. However, virtualization and the failover cluster feature still want to make sure that your hardware solution is very reliable. So we have some built-in monitoring tools that run on all the VMs on the machine, continuously monitoring to make sure that there are not going to be any issues. And at the trigger, whenever there is a trigger of any upcoming failure, an alert is sent so that you could basically go fix it. So this is an optional criteria that we recommend that you have. And the same with virtual machine failover prioritization. Your scenario might require some VMs to be, you know, in a failover scenario, some VMs to be migrated before anything else, mission critical VMs. Virtual machine affinity. You might have a SharePoint server and a SQL server, and you may want them to be migrated in sync for your business scenario. So these are all optional scenarios that we basically provide in the reference architecture that you could actually follow based on what makes sense for you in your business. Fiber channel disks and SSDs, they are very expensive options, but they come with additional features. Again, it's up to the discretion of the partner or the business. Today, we partner with many partners who've come up with multiple private cloud fast track solutions. Each partner listed here have more than one solution to cater to various needs. Their solutions range from small to large solutions. They are highly configurable, highly customizable based on what your business needs. So you have flexibility, you have choice in choosing the best solution for your needs. The partners in alphabetical order are Cisco, Dell, EMC, Fujitsu, Hitachi, HP, Huawei, IBM, NEC, NetApp, and Nimble Storage. The list keeps growing. We have more partners coming in every day building more solutions for you. I'm going to, in the interest of time, I know we have a party to get to and it's already end of the day, so I'm going to quickly run through the slides, which is basically the partner solutions that are available in the market today and those that are going to be announced soon. You will get the slide deck as part of the session, at the end of the session. In addition, we also have the various partners here at TechEd Europe. We strongly recommend that you go check out their booths, check out their solutions, and if you have any question about any particular partner solution. We'll be happy to provide some contact information for you to go pursue and get additional details on. Cisco has multiple solutions in partnership with different OEM partners. They have the FlexPod with NetApp. They have the vSpec solutions with EMC. They also have the integration solution with System Center. And then Dell has four different solutions, some of them already in the market, a couple of them to be announced soon. This, again, as the name suggests, they have different solutions for different needs. Like, they have really small solutions, which is Active System 50, all the way to Active System 1000, which can scale up to large number of VMs. EMC has vSpec solutions with Cisco hardware, and they actually have a solution for small and medium business. They also have a slightly higher end solution for enterprises. Fujitsu has a cluster-in-a-box small solution, but they're also working on some large designs that will be available soon. Hitachi has a CB500 system and a CB2000 system with VSP, which is again, which can actually scale up to 12,000 virtual machines. HP has the VS3 system, which is single rack and multi-rack. Huawei has a small solution today, which is already available in the market, and they are going to be announcing a medium-sized solution soon. IBM has three small solutions in the market today based on the different design patterns. One of them is converged, the other non-converged, and they actually also have different storage type and network hardware. NEC is working on medium-sized solutions, and that will be available starting June, mainly in NEC Japan, but it will also be available through NEC Corporation of America. NetApp, they have the FlexPod solution with Cisco. They also have some ExpressPod and a small, very small solution, which is NetApp for Microsoft Private Cloud. Nimble Storage, they have a SmartStack solution, which is basically for small to mid-size private cloud configuration. You can start with small and scale up based on your business need. So as you saw, we basically have different solutions. We have flexibility, we have choice. One of the other questions we keep getting is, how do I know what's the right solution for me? And once I know the solution, how do I actually get there? How do I start migrating my existing workloads to those solutions? So we have two different tools, which is provided by the Solutions Accelerator tool. These are free, easy-to-download tools that are available at Microsoft.com. I'll be giving a demo of the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit and a quick overview of the VM Conversion tool. If you haven't already, we strongly recommend that you go check these out and give it a try. These are really good, useful tools to have if you are planning on migrating your existing workloads and trying out one of the private cloud fast track solutions. So the first part is the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. As the name suggests, the tool actually does two key things. One, it assesses your current environment for all its workloads. It assesses the utilization numbers on each of the workloads. The tool actually runs typically for many days in your existing environment. It gathers all the utilization numbers and analyzes the peaks and spikes in the environment. The second part is a planning toolkit. Once you have all the data on your existing workloads, including Linux workload consolidation, the tool actually helps you decide what's the best private cloud fast track solution is for your specific needs. Now, I'll walk over step by step on how you can get there. So this is a Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. They have various scenarios that they support today. That includes cloud, desktop, server, desktop virtualization, server virtualization, usage tracking, database, and environment. For the purposes of this session, we are more interested in the cloud scenario, and very specifically the private cloud fast track, which is under the cloud scenario. Now, as you can see, the tool actually provides for multiple features, which is assessing your environment. And that's the first two steps, which is collecting the inventory data and collecting the performance data and creating a hardware configuration. Now, for the, like I said, the tool has to run in your environment for many days to gather the exact details of your workloads and the utilization numbers. So for the purposes of this demo, we are going to be using a pre-collected data on an environment that we set up for the demo. And I'll just be showing you how to run it to use it for mapping into a particular private cloud fast track solution that's of interest to you. So we go to the last part, which is run the private cloud fast track wizard. Now, as you can see, we have 5 pre-loaded samples here. Now, we have a 6 to 12 node sample, we have an 8 node sample, we have 8 to 16 nodes with a large memory sample, and 8 to 32 node sample. Now, if you're interested, if you've always worked with a particular OEM partner, or if you're interested in any one particular OEM partner's solution, you could get an XML file from the OEM partner, download it into the tool, and the tool will do the mapping for that particular solution. It doesn't have to be the ones that we have preloaded for you. So I'm going to choose the first one, which is the 6 to 12 node sample. Click next. Here is where you basically choose, you let the tool know how do you want the tool to map in terms of processor, memory utilization, storage utilization, and network throughput. I know a lot of you feel more comfortable if your utilization numbers are not 100%, you know, if there is a buffer. The tool will allow you to choose between 50% and 100%, and it will map only to that utilization numbers in the chosen solution. For the purposes of this demo, I'm going to leave it as 100% utilization on each host. Next step is actually choosing the computers in the network, basically the environment data that we collected. Now, the data that we collected using the tool is already in the tool, which is the first option. The second option is if you have the data collected through any other tool or any other means, you could input the text file into the tool, and the tool will still run the mapping for you. So here is the list of all the workloads in the environment that we ran the tool on. We have a total of 325 machines. I'm going to select all of them. As you can see, this environment has physical workloads, virtualized VMs, and they have Linux workloads, they have client workloads, server. I'm going to click next. Here is an overview of the solution that we have selected. So basically, we chose a 6 to 12 node sample. What it means is the solution has a base configuration of 6 hosts and a maximum configuration of 12 hosts. Each private cloud fast track solution is designed to scale. You could choose as small as the minimum configuration, and based on your environment needs, you can keep scaling up and go anywhere up to the maximum configuration in that particular solution. Here, the number of hosts is basically 6 in the minimum configuration, and you have a total IOPS of 25,000. SAN storage of 250 terabyte, and a network throughput of 20 GPS. If you scroll down to the maximum configuration, you basically have 12 hosts, 75,000 IOPS, SAN storage of 1,000 terabyte, and a network throughput of 10 GPS that supported by this solution. I'm going to click finish. The tool takes a few minutes to run. One thing I have to mention about this tool is that it's a completely agentless tool. So here, what you see is a summary, quick summary of what the tool tells you. So for the environment that we have the data on, if you go with the maximum configuration of the private cloud solution, you need one solution, which basically has 12 hosts, and of the 325 machines, 314 Windows machines, 11 Linux machines, 324 machines were actually placed successfully in the private cloud solution. One machine was not. So the tool also tells you that if your environment has a special hardware, that is not going to be satisfied by the private cloud solution that you've selected, then it gives you an alert so that you could go look at other solutions to see what best suits your need. Now, you have a detailed report that is provided by the tool under Generate Private Cloud Fast Track. This gives you an Excel version of the report, and it's very detailed, including the utilization numbers and how they were placed. So you go to Documents folder. Under the Map tool, you have the, here we have the latest one that we ran. So here, if you look at it, we saw that 314 were Windows machines. Here's a quick overview again, of which 250 were Windows Server, 168 servers that we had performance data on, 62 we did not have that, and of the 325, one machine could not be placed due to specific hardware needs, special hardware needs. Now, if I go to the details under consolidation of base configuration, here is where the tool basically gives you the details of how it placed the different workloads in your host. So since we selected 100% utilization numbers on each of the processor, memory, and network, the tool actually fills up every host in the solution to 100% capacity in terms of processor, memory, and everything before it goes on to the next host. So in the base configuration, we saw that the tool said you require two solutions if you go with the base configuration. The reason being, with the available memory and CPU and disk IO in the base configuration, when the tool started filling up your host, at one point, the memory basically got exceeded. And so it started going to fill on the next host. So if you scroll down, the tool needed 11 hosts for the particular environment in the base configuration to be successfully able to place all the workloads. There is still capacity in one host where you could add, but not a whole lot. But if that's all you're going to scale to and you know that you're not going to be increasing your environment data, then this is definitely a good way to go. However, if you go to the maximum configuration, you can see that since each of the machines actually have, servers have increased memory, increased network throughput, the utilization numbers, even though 100%, each host can handle more workloads than in the base configuration. So if we scroll down, if you go with the maximum configuration, you only need one solution that you need to buy, and you still have almost four hosts with availability, that with capacity that you can use to scale up for your future needs. Now, I'm going to quickly run through the wizard again for a different solution to show the difference. This time, I'm going to go with the last one, which is the 8 to 32 node sample. I'm not going to go into the details, but just to give you an overview. Same numbers, same environment. And here, the difference is in the base configuration and the maximum configuration. These are all high-end machines compared to the one we selected before. As you can see, whether you go with the minimum configuration or the maximum configuration, you need only one solution if you go with this particular solution, because this solution has more capacity than the previous one that we selected. So even if you decide to go with the minimum configuration in this case, it's still fine. You'll just need one of those. And again, the decision to go with the minimum or maximum or somewhere in between depends on your future needs and the capacity that you want to plan. Now, going back to our deck, the second tool that I want to quickly talk about is the virtual machine converter. So now you know what private cloud solution to go for your environment need. And the next question that we get asked is, how do I migrate my existing workloads into one of the virtual, you know, Hyper-V workloads? So this is a tool, again, which is a very, very small size tool for download. It's only 4.3 MB. It's free. This tool basically converts your VMware VMs into Hyper-V VMs. And the way the tool basically works is it translates the entire configuration of the VMware VM into Hyper-V VM, each and every bit of it. And the way it does it is basically it takes a snapshot of your VMware VM. It uninstalls the VMware tools, installs the Hyper-V tools, copies every configuration of the VMware VM into a temporary location, brings back the snapshot on the machine, source machine, so that your source machine is not affected in any way. You would have your VMware VM running on the source machine at the end of the conversion, just like as it was before. And then it converts everything that is copied into the temporary folder into your destination server, and it basically will have a working, running Hyper-V VM at the end of the conversion. So you could have both source and destination running, or you could have the tool tell the tool to just have one running or the other not. So basically, the tool supports Windows Server guest operating system conversion, including 2008 R2, Server 2008, and Windows Server 2003 SP2. Since I was not able to provide a demo of this tool, I've provided a link which gives you step-by-step instruction on how to use the tool. The key factor that I'd like to call out is this tool has both a very interactive graphical user interface as well as command line feature. So if you have an existing automation that you would like to add this tool to, you can convert multiple VMware VMs at one shot automatically into Hyper-V VMs. So we, again, strongly recommend that you try out download these two tools, try it out. These two are phenomenal tools. They are free and easy to download. So that brings us to the end of the session. Again, thank you all for taking time at the end of the day to attend the session. We hope you found it useful. We went through a lot of questions that we received, and we hope we answered most of the content. Please do provide feedback on what you thought of the session and what you would like us to provide next time around, and we'd love to hear your feedback.
In addition, please don't forget that down in the Partner Pavilion, we have many of our partners are here with Fast Track Solutions, and please ask them about it. Let them know, hey, you're interested and you're looking for a specific type of deployment. Is it a branch office? Is it a larger deployment than that? What is it you're trying to deploy? Let them know so they can make sure that they're building the right solutions based on your requirements. And remember, it is about agility. It's about reducing risk and having that flexibility and choice that we provide with the Microsoft Private Cloud Fast Track program.
And in review, here are some of the links. We do have the reference architecture end-to-end deployment guide publicly available for you to download and give it a try. We also have the link to the map tool and the VM converter tool. We have the link to the step-by-step demo of the VM converter tool that would be very useful. And
let me highlight that first one for just a second here, the Fast Track reference architecture. I think we need to be, personally at Microsoft, we need to be a little bit louder about this. But for folks that want to build private cloud Fast Track solutions, guess what? That's the end-to-end guide there. It's a tome. It's lots of pages. It's very detailed. It is talking about the different types of architecture. It walks you through those different how to configure all of those things in very, really great detail. The map toolkit giving you a tremendous amount of insight into assessment and planning. And finally, the virtual machine converter. Don't forget that one thing that's really nice about it is it's a full VM converter. It's not just a disk converter. There's a lot of free VMware to VHD converters out there. Those just convert the disk. This actually converts the entire VM. So if it was running on VMware and it had two virtual procs and this amount of memory and this amount of storage, when it converts it, it'll actually recreate the virtual machine with those amount of virtual procs, that amount of storage. It's the full conversion. So it's a really nice little tool there. And again, it's very small, only a couple megabytes.
And again, a quick recap on all our different partners. Please do go check out their booths. And if you need more information on any of the partner solutions, we'll be able to provide contact and other information that you would need. Here are some of the track resources. TechEd 2013 session resources, which includes a channel 9 where you'd be able to see the session again on demand. We have some TechNet resources here as well, including MSDN and learning. Please do take time to evaluate our session and provide some feedback so we could improve this. And
thank you very much, and have a wonderful week here at TechEd.
Thank you.